All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Charles Moskowitz. Welcome to the program, Monday through Friday, live here at YouTube and subscribing stations. It's my honor to welcome back David Horowitz, the Horowitz Freedom Center. David is the author of the most recent pamphlet, I Can't Breathe, How a Racial Hoax is Killing America. David, we have...
Charles, it's a book.
Oh, it's a book. Okay, thank you.
Comes with a trigger warning, too, if you're...
You might actually learn something here. You get triggered. You know, we have a situation where Black Lives Matter is involved with the looting of Black businesses, the burning of Black neighborhoods, indirect involvement in the uptick of Black murder in our major cities last summer, including the murder of children. And their cohorts, under the guise of Attorney General Merrick Garland, the critical race theorists, which is sort of the higher end of the scissor. Garland now wants to call parents who criticize critical race theory as domestic terrorists and to basically clamp down on any kind of a free speech opposition. What do you make of that? And talk a little bit about the origins of Black Lives Matter.
Well, it began with the Trayvon Martin case, and which happens to be a case where I've taken a lot of flack from the right because I felt that Zimmerman should have been convicted of manslaughter and given a hefty sentence. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a cop and he wasn't supposed to follow Trayvon. He was supposed to report suspicious movements to professionals.
Right.
And he stalked Trayvon. Trayvon turned on him. And when Zimmerman was losing the fight, he shot Trayvon through the heart. So I thought that deserved pretty hefty punishment. But police, Patrice Cullors, or maybe it was Alicia Garza, there are three so-called founders of Black Lives Matter, all of them pathological liars and racists, mm-hmm. Who have no interest in Black people.
And they Marxists, have, I might add.
They just exploit Black people, mm-hmm. For their Marxist causes. They're disgusting. Yeah. And it grew from there. It really took off with the Michael Brown case. Here's a hoax. Hands up, don't shoot. No. And not only did five Blacks and two multiracial people, were eyewitnesses, testify that Michael Brown was charging the police officer who was firing at him out of sheer fear and self-defense to try to stop his charge until he killed him with the fifth or sixth shot. So you not only did you have five Blacks and two multiracial people testify under oath to a grand jury and to various investigations, but you had an investigation by the Obama Justice Department, mm-hmm. clear the cop and say that it was a justifiable homicide. It's over 10 years later. You have Hollywood turning out films saying Michael Brown was shot while kneeling and surrendering with his hands up. This is a hit lie. A lot of people have died because of this lie. A lot of minority businesses have been destroyed because of this lie. But the left, you know, being a leftist means you never have to say you're sorry. I think that's a...
Or ever having to tell the truth.
A line devised by leftists anyway.
Yeah, meanwhile, they're parading in the streets saying, kill, fry them like bacon, pigs in a blanket, this weird slogan.
Yeah, and the word lie is that Black people are like deer. There's a hunting season, but it's all year long.
Yeah. You know,
LeBron James telling this.
Oh, terrible.
Yeah, it gets people killed is what it does. The fact of the matter is that the hoax started with George Floyd. He's not a typical Black person. He's a career criminal and a hopeless drug addict who got himself killed because he was resisting arrest. You can see the videos of him resisting arrest.
Right.
He was so high on fentanyl. He had four times the lethal dose of fentanyl in his system, which is why he died.
That's right.
But even so, was there a racial element to this killing? billions of dollars in damage was done, scores of people murdered, because it's supposed to be a hunting season on black people because of their skin color. This was no evidence was ever presented at the George Floyd, at the trial of the police officer, that the police officer had any racial views whatsoever. Not even in anger could they find a witness that said that he called a black person a name. But worse than that, Keith Ellison, who's the attorney general for the state of Minnesota, yeah, and a raving racist leftist who spent an 11-year apprenticeship fronting for Louis Farrakhan, the most disgusting bigot in the country. I mean, anti-gay, anti-Jew, anti-white, anti-America, right, who chanted death to America from Tehran, of all places. This is who Keith Ellison served. And he was the chief prosecutor on the case. 60 Minutes asked him right after this fake trial, was there a racial element in the killing of George Floyd? And Keith, sorry about that.
No, that's okay. I hope they're not, I hope the FBI isn't showing up.
Oh, I'm not, yeah.
Meanwhile, this led to a movement that called for defunding the police all over the country.
Wait.
Yeah.
Keith Ellison's answer.
Right.
Was there a racial element to the killing of George Floyd? We couldn't find one. If Keith Ellison couldn't find a racial element, there was none. And there was not one headline with that interview, which exonerated the police and showed how Ben Crump and all these ambulance chasers who are, it's all about extortion. They gave George Floyd's family $27 million in a wrongful death suit when he basically killed himself on fentanyl. You can't kill somebody with a knee on the side of the neck. How do we know this? Because there's a record, it's a practice of the Minneapolis Police Department, which, by the way, is headed by a black police chief. Mm-hmm. There's a record of 247 uses of the knee on the neck. Nobody died from it. Why? Because the windpipe is here. And what's done here is you close off the blood supply to the brain in the hopes of making a dangerous person pass out before they hurt themselves or somebody else. This is the level of lies that Black Lives Matter thrives on and collects hundreds of millions of dollars from spineless corporations for promoting. And what the Democrat Party is chiefly responsible for, because they have officially endorsed Black Lives Matter, and this wretched human being who passes for our president these days, as said, the systematic racism permeates American life, touches every aspect of it. This is a lie worthy of Xi Jinping or the Iranian terrorists. There is no systemic racism in America. And how do I know that? Because the Civil Rights Act of 1964 outlawed, in so many words, institutional and which is systemic racism. So there would be a tsunami of lawsuits. There are thousands of black, assume every white person is a racist. Thousands of black attorneys, district attorneys, attorneys general, mayors, city council members, everybody involved in the Freddie Gray case was black. The mayor was black, the president was black, the attorney general was black, the attorney general for the state of Maryland was black. You just go on, the judge who exonerated, three of the six people accused of a racial murder of a black person were black.
They're all black.
The judge who exonerated him was black. This is a sick joke.
Yeah.
With America, and America's being destroyed over it. All these people, we need apologies from LeBron James and a much better human being. You know, you get to a certain age, I can't remember his first name, but Russell. the great center of the Boston Celtics.
Oh yeah, Bill Russell, yeah.
Bill Russell,
yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. He too needs to apologize for saying that white black children are scared not of being killed by the Ku Klux Klan, but by police. It's How terrible. Dare he make such a claim? There's no evidence whatsoever to support it. And you go all of their martyrs, and they're all hoaxes. Breonna Taylor was an accomplice to a major drug dealer. She was a criminal. She used her bank account to hide his criminal gotten money. She used her mailing address for the distribution of his drugs. And when the police showed up and announced that they were there with a warrant, her boyfriend shot the police and wounded one of them. This is in the middle of the night in the dark. These cops have families they want to go home to. So they have a saying, pray and spray, which means you don't know where the shots are coming from. You don't know how many people are shooting at you. To save your life, you just spray as many bullets as you can in the direction from which the shot came. That's how Breonna Taylor died. Her boyfriend forgot to tell her to get out of the way. And they gave her family $12 million. It's an extortion racket, people. And its chief victim is our country.
And the mainstream media is completely complicit in supporting it. I'll give one illustration, that being the Lester Holt showed a segment regarding that girl who was stabbing other girls and in her neighborhood in Louisville.
The cop rescued the life of a black girl.
Right, the cop rescued these girls by stopping this brutal murderer. And when Lester Holt showed footage of this, they whited out the knife so you couldn't see it, making it look like this was a police atrocity.
Lester Holt is not a stupid person.
No.
He's a bad person. It's a big difference. And this is true. It's true of all the Democrats you see on TV. They knowingly lie to defame our country and undermine it and cause it to be, it's the most dangerous moment we've ever faced as Americans. We are within a stone's throw of losing our country if these people continue to be successful, although the signs are that they won't be.
And the latest development
is a person who obviously calls herself a liberal, Jessica Tarlov.
Oh,
the Fox liberal.
She's the one that made up the lies about President Trump during the phony impeachment.
Yeah, and she lied and she defended the FBI intimidating parents at a school board meeting because they raised their voices because they're upset that these communist teachers are ramming down their children's throats lies about America. America is God's gift to black people. Why do I say that? Slavery existed in Africa for 1,000 years before a white person ever set foot on that continent. Slavery was a normal institution in all human societies for 3,000 years before white Christian males, Wilberforce in England and Thomas Jefferson in America, said that every individual has a God-given right to liberty. That's what Jefferson said. That's what ended slavery. Black person in America owes their freedom to Thomas Jefferson. And 360,000 white Americans, mainly white, who gave their lives to free the slaves. You show me the black country which enslaved white people, where 300,000 blacks gave their lives to save the white, to liberate the white slaves, and we'll have a different conversation.
Well, America was the first society in history.
Were the first, practically the first people on this continent, for crying out tears. And the left has stolen their birthright. Instead of being proud of a country which gave 360,000 lives to free them, they have been enslaved by the English, they're indicted. And you know, none of these leftists understand why America couldn't end slavery in 1776. And the reason is the greatest slave powers on the planet were England, the greatest powers were slaveocracies, England and Spain. And if the if Jefferson and the Americans had declared all of North America free, the South would have seceded, joined forces with the British, who did burn the White House in 1814, and they would have destroyed the North, which had freed all its slaves, and we would have had slavery for another 100 years. So what we have here is gross ignorance, and we can thank our schools, our K-12 schools and our universities. The slogan I want to see out there from the right is defund the schools, fund the parents, give the parents the vouchers, the scholarships for which they can pay to any school that will give their kids a decent education, and take it away from these communist teacher unions.
Oh yeah, I mean, critical race theory is now the official legal state-sponsored philosophy of this country, and it's in the schools, it's in corporations.
We have the most overtly racist administration in American history in Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
And Merrick Garland's son-in-law is the head of this Panorama, which is the main educational outfit for critical race theory.
And Merrick Garland is a snake. They say, oh, he is a guy who's above partisan politics, the most honorable person, I know I'm dealing, with the devil.
And his wife, by the way, is also a chief advisor for election irregularities. We don't need to go into that because I'll lose my show on YouTube. But the point is
we know that the Democrats are stealing elections.
Well, let's not even go there right now.
I mean, why else would you be against voter ID? If you're against voter ID, you're a Ku Klux Klan racist. You think that Black people are too stupid to follow the same rules that poor white people follow? Come on.
Yeah, meanwhile, they're cracking Black people's jaws for going into a restaurant without a vaccine ID. Yeah. But in New York, and Black Lives Matter actually is on the right side on that one.
The only way to describe the Biden administration and the Democrat Party is they're fascists. That's the appropriate description.
Oh, yeah. And the best illustration of that is
Republicans are calling them liberals and progressives.
Yeah.
What the hell is progressive about trying to rerun Hitler Germany or Stalin Russia over again?
Well, the best example is the CRT criminalizing parents who are criticizing CRT for their children. Mothers and fathers standing up at school board meetings. That's the most American thing you could get. Now they're seen as, quote, domestic terrorists. And meanwhile, Garland is totally conflicted.
Pelosi's contribution. She wants to turn January 6th into the Reichstag fire, where Hitler, like Biden, Hitler was elected in a democracy. Mm. But within four weeks, the Reichstag, which is their capital, was burned, and they accused a Dutch communist. I don't know if he actually did it or not.
Right.
It's the use they made of it, which is the use.
They suspended the Constitution openly, and that was the beginning of Hitler's ascent to complete.
Which is what Nancy Pelosi is doing in regard to January 6th.
And meanwhile, they have hundreds of people being held in prison without charge, without due process.
Thing, if you saw Tucker the other night, is this white-haired naval officer who served his country, who they put in solitary confinement because he was around the Capitol that evening.
And because he refused to cooperate with the FBI as an informant, I might add. And I mean, that whole narrative is unraveling very quickly.
Defund the FBI.
Yeah, if you get rid of the FBI, we'll get rid of domestic.
You understand exactly what's going on. The reason they want, there are 18,000 police departments. So if one police department is rotten, there are 17,999 other police departments that are not.
That's right. If
you defund the local police, you replace them with a Gestapo, a federal police force, something this country, the whole framework that the founders put in place was to prevent monopoly control of law enforcement and so forth. And it's what the Democrats are dedicated to ending. They are a fascist party, and every one of them, including Jessica Tarlov, not to mention Kirsten Powers, two of my favorites, are fascists.
Clearly. So David, where can people get your excellent book?
Everywhere, hopefully. You can get it at Amazon, you can get it at frontpagemag.com, you can get it at horowitzbooks.com, you should be able to get it at Walmart, probably in Target.
Oh, that's good. If you get it into those stores, then it's gold.
Barnes and Noble. Yeah, actually, it's an oddest sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Late in life, I've become a best-selling author. So there you are. Maybe I learned something in the.
Your books are very powerful. I mean, you write in a diatribe style, which is fantastic. You get right into the crux of the matter in a way that very few authors around right now do. And so I applaud your book.
We used to call it telling it like it is when we were telling it like it wasn't.
Oh yeah, that's right. And also Your Radical Son is an important book. It talks about your background and how you grew up in a communist household and then what happened, how you, you know, came over to the more conservative side. A very important book, very influential. So David Horowitz, as always, I want to thank you for joining me.
And thank you for having me, Charles. I look forward, come May, I've got another one coming.
Well, what's it going to be?
It's called The Final Battle, How the Next Election Could Be the Last.
Okay. Thanks a lot, David.
All right.
So David Horowitz is the author of I Can't Breathe, How a Racial Hoax is Killing America. I would urge people to check out the review of it on Front Page Magazine, which is run by the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Excellent, excellent site. I look at it often. Great editorial, great essays. We've got Duvid coming up, and we've got Adam Green from No More News coming up. And I'm particularly interested in talking to Adam because he, to put it basically, he's been censored from YouTube and other platforms. And since I'm right now presently doing the show on YouTube, we have to be careful. I do have announcements coming up, not right now, but it'll happen, hopefully, God willing, in the next week or two, where my program will be carried by a new network that will let me do what I do without censorship. I will be unbridled. I will be unleashed. I will be uncensored on this new network. I can't go into the details because it's not actually online yet, but it is backed by several very important and prominent news people and journalists. And so I will be letting people know about that when it happens. All right, we've got Duvid coming up. Here he comes. Duvid, how are you? Yep, there he is. So Duvid, we've got Adam Green hopefully coming on soon. I hope that I'm able to do this technically. I think I can. All he needs to do is call in and I click a button. Hopefully that'll do it. But Adam Green from No More News is, he's been censored from YouTube. He's very controversial. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I've wanted to talk to him for quite a while.
Yeah, he just messaged me. He said 5 minutes, and I assume he's just going to take the Zoom link. So just like you let me in, you should be able to let him in and have a three-way call.
Okay, good. He's been...
He's actually a tech guy. I mean, one of probably his successes in streaming is being able to do his own tech.
Now, is he doing a broadcast elsewhere right now? Where can his show be seen and heard?
I mean, he's got his own media. So right now his main platform is Odyssey, although he still posts all his stuff on BitChute. Mm-hmm. And I think he was on Trovo. And so I'm not sure if he's like you where he's posting it on a whole bunch of things. He might just have a few ones. He's got a web page and uses Twitter to alert his audience. So
he's got a big social network. And I'm on a bunch of live streams and I do post the show on a lot of different sites, including Gab and BitChute and all the rest. But what is Odyssey? That one I haven't heard of.
It's just a new streaming platform. Okay. It has some slowdown, so it's not like BitChute because you could live stream on it and it keeps the videos. And I think Trovo You could live stream, but it doesn't keep the videos.
Right.
So
yeah, I live stream on Trovo, and I live stream on about a half a dozen other sites, including Twitter and Facebook. I mean, I'm up on all of them. You know, I feel constrained by censorship, and I will note that I understand what community standards are. I've been a radio talk show host in Greater Boston over the years at different small stations where I used to do like a radio show, and I would also sell ad time. And so I know what community standards are. I know what the FCC regulations are. You know, I would go to a radio station to do that show where I would have to, you know, look eyeball to eyeball with people. I mean, there would be the manager there, there'd be salespeople and staff, there'd be a board op. You know, you have to kind of observe certain standards when you're working directly with other people. And I knew how to do that. And I never got in trouble at all with the FCC. Maybe I got in a little hot water sometimes with politics with people, but the point is that I know the difference between community standards and political censorship. And right now on YouTube, we're having political censorship. And that to me is really abhorrent. And it's intolerable. So I'm hoping that this new network is, you know, does what they tell me they're gonna do, is to let me do my show without any censorship.
And probably also related to complaints. So, I mean, just like a police, you know, saying like, God forbid, racial profiling or something like that, you know, the police came because someone made a complaint, and you say like, I'm just a suspicious looking person, and really I didn't do anything wrong. And unfortunately, people complain about me all the time. But you know, like, so I would say Adam Green's probably even more careful than you are in terms of, you know, following rules and regulation. Like, I mean, he's pretty polished about that. But he gets a lot of complaints, and then his, and then you'll right. possibly,
and then they don't,
even if he didn't technically violate the terms of service, he's got, you know, he's on the top hit list of the ADL and different organizations. And like, you know, you're this program today that there may be zero violations of terms of service, but it may get a bunch of complaints.
Yeah,
he has puts it in a different situation of, you know, what does community standards mean? Okay, like I didn't break any rules. It doesn't matter that everyone hates me, or it's a divided audience where you have a combination of people who like and hate you. I would say it's different because it's based on complaints.
So you have enemies who will complain about you, and that ends up taking you off. Okay, we've got Adam Green. Adam, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. I've wanted to talk with you for quite a while. I used to watch you regularly when you were on YouTube, but of course YouTube, you know, this is YouTube, so we have to be careful. I understand they just knocked off Eric Metaxas.
Just mention quickly that Adam Green is the source of me and Charles streaming together, because after I had my first appearance on Adam Green with Christopher Van Jerkness, Charles tweeted me and asked you know, me for an interview, which I responded, and we did an interview, and then we ended up doing a weekly program. And I guess Charles had spoken with Christopher Van Jerkness. I shared that link with Adam yesterday. That didn't go that well, but so Adam Green in some way has credit for this program of me and Charles, because that's where Charles found me. And ironically, you know, I call this Partners in Torah, and even the ADL, so like Adam is known for scriptural sources. So you talk with Adam, he's going to quote the Talmud, he's going to quote the Maimonides, he's going to quote the rabbis, probably more than Charles does.
Oh yeah, and also I should note, David, that I don't know if the ADL was behind it, but you and I, two fairly devout Jews, we were taken down on YouTube for alleged hate speech a while ago in one of my videos. And I contested that, and that was, they didn't agree. So I got a strike.
So I would guess someone complained, that I doubt it was an algorithm. Someone probably actively complained about us, but I mean, they don't even tell us that, and maybe they shouldn't, but you know, there could be any number of concerned Jews or just people who don't like us and complain about us because they want stuff out their competition or something like that. They're just like Jewish Republicans in general. So there could be any number of reasons why people might complain about us.
Well, in my case, I'm very critical of the left and the secular establishment that, dominates the Jewish world in right now, and certainly in the United States. Adam, what are you up to these days? What are you researching?
Oh, I'm getting into all types of interesting rabbit holes, or as I like to say, rabbi holes.
Okay.
And pun intended. So you haven't seen any of my videos, Charles, since I've been banned from YouTube? Like so many other people, you get banned from YouTube and you stop following somebody?
Well, I haven't been able to find you. Where can I reach you? You might as well talk about it now because we're on YouTube. So let people know.
Well, I mean, there's been like tens of thousands that have been banned from YouTube. Like you're not familiar with any of the alternative
platforms?
Some
of them I am. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I look at BitChute. I post my own show on BitChute, Gab, you know, several others.
You can just go to Adam's Twitter page and see his links to where he's posting.
Okay.
Is it that complicated? You never checked his Twitter page and followed
the link? Well, I heard the one show I did hear you doing, I thought it was great, was you basically moderated a debate between Bjerknes and E. Michael Jones. And
It's Bjerknes. Oh, yeah. You thought that was great?
Yeah. I mean, it was really a powerful contrast between them, and it got real testy, and it was just, it just brought up a lot of issues.
Bjerknes, Galitzian in the chat said it was like, God forbid,
he was on
yeshiva for anti-Semites. They were like talking about verses and what word means what, and arguing about the true definition of Greek terms.
It was very interesting. And but Bjerknes was on with me, didn't go well. He hung up on me. And
I saw that. I looked at all the comments too. It seemed like a lot of people in the comments were siding with him on your own channel. Yeah.
And, you know, look, I'll admit that I probably got too emotional when I had it, because when he started to talk about the Jewish character, that got under my skin. And I sent him a note afterwards saying, look, I would like to have you back, and I will try to be more moderate. And he sent me back a note saying that if I ever contacted him again, he was going to call authorities on me. So that was the last I heard from him. But, you know, he sounded
very serious.
Yeah, he was pretty pissed off, but you know, he remains invited. I mean, I agree that sometimes I might get too hot under the collar, but you know, that's how it goes.
Yeah, well, it's unfortunate that you haven't been seeing the videos that he and I have been doing together in my own presentations since I've been banned. Because I mean, you can ask Duvid; he's been watching. I've been covering some very deep Kabbalistic topics.
Okay. What is your general, and I know this is a thumbnail question, but what is your general understanding of Kabbalah at this time?
That it's the mystical kind of esoteric secrets fan fiction on the Torah, and that it comes from the Zohar, and
among other sources.
I mean, among other books, yes. But mostly the Zohar is like the most Kabbalistic book, isn't that right?
Right. That's right. It's kind of the main text for esoteric understanding in Judaism.
Yeah. All the stories there about Jacob and Esau. Did you ever see the video Duvid and I did about Jacob and Esau?
No.
Oh, that was a classic. And kind of how Esau has no share in the world to come. Esau is Christianity or Rome or Edom, right. Mm-hmm. And that the guardian angel is Satan, Samael. And I've been getting into how I believe that Christianity has been an intentional deception to trick the non-Jewish world into worshiping Yahweh, fearing and having obedience to Yahweh, believing the Torah is the word of God, believing the Jews were once chosen and had a covenant, and to believe that salvation is of the Jews. I should say Jays, we're on YouTube, I forgot. And that following a Jayish Messiah, which is Moshiach ben Joseph, the first Messiah, and there's two Messiahs, and in Kabbalah there's dualism, where there's like yin and yang, dark and light, pure and impure. Sure. Jesus is the Esau, Samael, Moshiach ben Joseph character that was prophesied to be rejected by the Israelites and to die and to be pierced and to be resurrected. And in that way, and I'm getting these arguments from a lot of Messianic Jews, but I guess I'll pause there and hear what you have to think about that, have to say about that.
I think that the Zohar was, at least by tradition, it was written by De Leon during the Spanish Inquisition. And I think that it should be viewed in that context, in that this was a cataclysmic event at that time. Jews were expelled from Spain. There was a lot of Jews that went underground, and
wasn't Spain 1492 and the Zohar was like the early 1300s?
Well, position went on for hundreds of years.
Yeah, I mean, it was there was a whole 100-year buildup to the final expulsion.
Yeah. But I guess I vindicated, and I kind of make note that he's always using the Davidson Sepharia translation, and it's funny because the Davidson Foundation supports most of these liberal causes in Metro Detroit, and almost none of the Jews who go to any of these liberal causes ever look at Sepharia. So it's but I vindicate that is largely what our books say, but it doesn't necessarily mean that's what Jews believe. No. And I tend to believe it. I tend to, you know, say, like, I went to Orthodox Hasidic yeshivas. I read the books. This is what our books say. And, you know, we talked about it with Charles, and, you know, rather than a man-made conspiracy to say, is it likely that, like, elders of Zion's got together thousands of years ago and conspired on this thousand-year project, that it's the hand of God and that the tradition is true. But I guess from Adam and Jerkness, I'd actually studied these books and vindicated to him that I apologize about that. How's Jerkness?
Just Jerkness. Like the J is silent. Is a Y.
Okay, yeah, but I vindicated that.
No one self-intended. I don't.
That is largely what the books actually say, right. and even defended that you know, like, maybe that is what we believe. So what?
Well, first of all,
which is what kind of me and Charles argue about.
It's not definitive. It's not canon. It's not Talmud. It's basically just a guide, and that, yeah, there's probably some anti-Christian stuff in there with regard to
the biggest gathering in Israel is the yurt site of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. I mean, God forbid the stampede this year, but hundreds of thousands of Jews, almost every year, the largest gathering in Israel is Jews going to the grave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who believed that the Zohar is his words.
No, it wasn't
a conspiracy written by Moshe Dilon.
He was a constitutionalist. He wanted to. He was not a mystic. He was not into the more mystical understanding. Now, the mystical tradition has always run as a thread through Judaism and through Christianity, as they have their own.
I mean, have you been to?
And through Islam.
Have you been to the grave of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai? I've been there probably maybe even 50 times.
But look, my point is that there might be some sort of anti-Christian stuff in there, given what was going on at the time. I think that's not definitive. It's not a central part of Judaism. And I think that Judaism and
being against idol worship isn't a central part of Judaism.
Yeah, but I don't. The question of whether Christianity is idol worship is not a central belief of Judaism. Some rabbis have said that. Rashi did not say that after studying the issue for many decades, because he understood that Christians believe in God. Now, in the modern times, in the 19th century, generally the view of Jesus has changed within Judaism, as in up until that point, Judaism viewed Jesus as a renegade, as a heretic, and which was why they may have supported his execution. But in the 19th century, that view changed in that Jesus became viewed as having been a devout Jew who basically transferred the entire teachings of the Torah, which Jesus was actually more zealous toward than the Pharisees. He believed that not a jot or tittle of the Torah would change until the end of time, that he brought the Torah with all of its moral and ethical precepts to the rest of the world, that was the founding of the United States, that was the founding of Western civilization, and that he was genuinely, he might have been wrong about the divine aspect, which is not a topic I like to discuss because I'm not a Christian and I don't want to get involved in Christology, but whether or not that is the case, nevertheless, his ministry brought all of the moral and ethical precepts that established Western civilization. And so he therefore should be viewed in that
context. There was Western civilization before Christianity.
Well, it
you don't think the Greco-Roman world had civilization?
Sure, but it's evolving, and it has evolved into the point where it's reached a, I think, an apogee of its success in the form of the United States. And it's based upon the basic Judaic understanding that mankind, that individuals, men and women, as the book of Genesis said, were created in the image of God, which means that every single life is of great essence. And the Talmud goes on to elaborate by pointing that every single human life is almost like its own universe, that we have a spiritual side in that we are created in the image of God. We have an animal side as well, which is the human side. And as such, every life is of intrinsic value. This was a revolutionary idea that was portrayed in the Torah and that Jesus advanced at a time when the Greeks were putting babies on the side of the mountains to die, when you had judges decide whether or not the baby would be viable for the state and whether it should be lived. Even the Romans rejected that and they advanced, they moved society up forward. The point I'm making is that the Judaic principles, which are hinged upon the value of every human life, and all of the laws and precepts that support that, were conveyed at Sinai and were advanced by the ministry of Jesus.
Well, I disagree with a lot you said there. For one, I've heard the we're all created in God's image argument, and that neglects what so many of the rabbis have said about how the Jews are chosen and above the other nations, and that they've got different souls, that the Gentile souls are polluted with the serpent seed, and that our souls come from the other side, the Sitra Atra, and that we cannot be rectified. We're not holy. We're metaphorically represented as the shards of the shattered vessels, whereas the J's are the divine sparks of light. But I wanted to back up a little bit, back to where we were talking about the Zohar. You said it's not central, and that may be true with conservative or reform or, you know, some factions of Judaism. But to a large, powerful, influential faction, it is central. It is the deepest inner secrets of the Torah. And even the Talmud supersedes and is authoritative over the Torah also in these circles. And but
it's the single largest gathering of Jews every single year. On the anniversary of the death of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai to his grave is the single largest gathering of Jews basically every single year for almost a few hundred years.
I want to comment, if you don't mind, Adam, on just one aspect which you bring up, which is the concept of the chosen people. And that the Jew, according to Zohar sources, even perhaps some Talmudic sources, has a little extra element of soul than the non-Jew. I think there may be some nasty comments made in the Talmud, which is written very much in the Socratic methodology, in that it leaves everything in it. But the majority view is that that concept simply means, and it does say that the Jew has a little slightly extra measure of soul. Mm-hmm. And I heard a rabbi explain this and answer this, which I thought was very interesting. He says, you compare it to like a gas tank on a car. You have a gas tank that takes 3 gallons and a gas tank that can take 5 gallons. The Jewish gas tank can take 5 gallons, whereas the non-Jewish gas tank can take 3. But if the gas tank only has a gallon in it and it's Jewish, then it doesn't have as much as a non-Jewish gas tank, which has 3 gallons. So it all depends upon it doesn't mean that the non-Jew therefore cannot obtain the same spiritual level, if not a greater spiritual level. It just simply states that the Jewish people were selected at Sinai not to rule the world, which is the anti-Semitic view, but to serve God as a priestly sect, to be witnesses to the existence of God and to know God, and then to serve as an example for the rest of the world to know God. And that Judaism does not call for people to become Jewish. It doesn't say you're a sinner or that you're less if you're not Jewish.
You're not allowed to be Jewish. You have to be Noahide.
No, you can become Jewish. But the point is, we don't call for that. Wait a minute. We don't call for that, unlike Christianity, quite frankly, which does, and Islam. Instead, anyone can know God. regardless of, you know, and that goes right, that's all throughout the Torah. It's not, we're not a, you know, we're not here to control anything or to demand something. We're here as servants of God. That's a misunderstanding, I think, in the Torah. And anybody can become a Jew. It's not, it's discouraged, but you go through a process. It takes a year. You study. You have to receive Shemitah. You have to, I mean, there's a process. I think a male has to have at least a symbolic circumcision, and there has to be mikvah. And there's a process, but anyone can do it, and people have done it if they choose to.
I'm sure many people know that it's largely discouraged, and it's made almost impossible. And this whole, oh, we don't force you to become Jewish. I think that forced conversions and evangelism has issues. I'm not defending that at all, but this idea that like you're so nice that you're not trying to convert people to be Jews, but there is push for Noahide laws, which means that you can't just decide to be chosen, and to say that there's any path to God is okay. That's not what the Torah teaches. Jealous God. And you're meant to destroy idol worship. So that means any other competing religions or competing cultures or people. And to say that it's a burden that you're chosen, I mean, a burden that God chose you and that you've got a bigger gas tank and a soul that comes from a holy place. And it's your job to spread the knowledge of the light of the Torah around the world. That means get the whole world to worship the God that chose you. The law must come forth from Zion. There's no,
right.
You can't sugarcoat the idea that Judaism teaches world dominance.
No, I
don't.
I find it interesting that Adam and Christopher, it's the God of all man. It's not a Jewish God. It is the God that is unlike any other God. It's not
the God of Israel.
Charles, you like to preach. I'm saying the interesting thing is Adam actually quotes our text. You don't quote our text. And then when you know the texts are quoted, you kind of like, well, I'm a Jew and I disagree. And I think this is what Judaism means. And I found it somewhat interesting in you know what the place is of our text in this. You know, if that's kind of what Christopher Van Jerkness says, like Charles, if you haven't read our text, I'm sorry. That's your problem, that this is what our texts say. And just because you're a Jew, your opinion doesn't matter. It's what the texts say. So if Adam comes up and says like, okay, this is what our books say, this is what the holy books say, and you're just a Jew who doesn't agree with the holy books, what does it matter what you think about Judaism? This is what the holy books say. And if Adam quoted it correctly, he quoted it correctly.
Right. I mean, the books are the books. It's like a constitution. It doesn't.
But you're the ones who's disagree. You're the one on two points who doesn't know what the books say and then disagreeing with what the books say.
But I want to talk about the Noahide covenant because, Adam, I have heard you talk about that. And with due respect, I think that you misunderstand it. The Noahide covenant does apply to all of mankind. It was devised by rabbis.
It's a made-up story. Nothing applies to me, man. That's your made-up fictional story. Noah's Ark never happened.
Well, from a Jewish standpoint, it does, but it was...
Well, you don't need to assert your authority over me that I need to follow some laws that are from one of your ancient mythological fables.
You can follow anything you want, Adam. I'm only noting that the Noahide covenant, which was something that was, I think, distilled in the 19th century, it deals with seven principles. They are universal principles. You can't murder, you can't steal. It calls for a separation of powers in government. It calls for not being cruel to animals. There are several other principles there that generally serve as a constitution for the world that precedes Torah. It precedes Sinai. It goes back to Noah. It's symbolized by the rainbow. It's not an imposition by anyone. It's something that Jews view as being a basic constitution for all of mankind. Now, nations don't have to observe it or people, but the laws that are there tend to be universal. Yeah, well, if you murder in any society, then you can.
Have you read this book? Kabbalah and Meditations for the Nations by Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg, the top Chabad rabbi in Israel.
I'll check it out.
Okay, well.
In a nutshell, what does it say?
You're telling me I don't understand Noahide laws, but you haven't read that? then I think maybe you don't understand.
Well, then maybe why don't you elucidate a little bit on what you think the Noahide laws?
Well, for number one, and I've seen rabbis say this as well, you impose the seven Noahide laws on a nation and give them the chance to basically bend the knee to you and worship you as God's chosen people. Otherwise, it's off with your head. That's what the Maimonides ruling law is.
I've never heard that. I'm not saying it that this guy doesn't say it. I'll have to look into it.
It's the first two Noahide laws that concern me, idol worship and blasphemy. That's like saying that you must worship our God. That it's as simple as that.
Well, first of all, I don't think the Noahide laws are quite put in that context that you must observe them. They're simply guides for all of mankind. And idol worship is something that I think certainly has been rejected by most people in the world at this point. It's, you know, we have our
they modern, believe Jesus is idol worship.
No, they don't.
In here, I mean, and I've seen lots of sources.
There are some rabbis who have said that.
You can always argue there's a debate because there's always, you know, somebody going against the grain. But
no, the mainstream Judaism does not view it that way. Yes, there have been rabbis over centuries who have said that.
Mainstream Judaism says that Jesus's name, Yeshu, should be blotted out, just like he's Amalek.
That's
true, but
that doesn't mean that Christianity is involved with idol worship. Yeah, Christian, particularly the Toldot Jeshu, which I think you're talking about, had some terrible things to say about Jesus. I'm not denying that. There were some terrible things said about Judaism by early Christian thinkers like St. John Chrysostom and St. Jerome. There was a war going on between these two sects, both of which were Judaic, in the first two centuries of the Common Era. So yeah, there were nasty things said on both sides.
Two nations will come from thy womb, right?
Excuse me?
Jacob and Esau, the fight between
Rome
and Jerusalem, right?
That's right, sure.
Cain and Abel.
It was a very brutal fight, I may add, and the Romans were not exactly, you know, easygoing. You know,
and how did they defeat the Romans? They couldn't do it by military force.
They did it through Christianity.
The lie of Christianity and Moshiach ben Joseph, which is to be rejected, scorned, pierced, resurrected, and go to the nations first.
Well, what I would suggest is that, yeah, that has been the opinion of a lot of rabbis. That has
Cain came first. Esau came first. Ishmael came first. There's this theme of the first one being on the evil side of the paradigm of the dialectic.
They weren't anointed by God, which Jacob was. Jacob got the birthright. And then Jacob's son...
God hates Esau, and who does rabbinical Jews believe Esau is? Esau represents.
They believe it's Rome. I get that.
And the nations, the Gentiles in general, also.
Right. Well, you know, again, I mean, every individual is created equal, and everyone has the capacity to know God.
But it's said that Israelites have a bigger gas tank.
Europe in Christianity is
spiritually speaking, not literally,
and Islam is under
Ishmael. It's not a matter of controlling the secular world. It's a matter of that at Sinai, God gave the children of Israel at that time an extra burden in order to preach and be spiritual for all men. And that burden included things like being kosher and the Shabbat and other things and controlling that tiny speck of land called Israel as a way to be a priestly sect for all mankind. Yes, that is what Judaism teaches.
Imagine the power that you have being the priest and the prophets, the power that comes with being able to speak for God. I don't want to grant you guys. No. I don't believe any of that
stuff. It's the opposite. We don't speak for God. We submit to God. God speaks for God. No one says that any person speaks for God. If a person says they speak for God, that's absolute heresy in Judaism.
That's what you say the Torah is.
The Torah is not God speaking to man.
The children of prophets. I mean, God speaks through the Jewish.
Torah is God revealing.
God speaks through the Jewish people.
To mankind.
Even though God is in fact speaking through Charles right now in a certain way of like a low level of prophecy. I mean, saying that if Charles is a Jew, he's the descendant of prophets, and the prophetic blood runs through me and Charles. And to some extent, yes, God does speak through us.
But I don't claim to speak for God. Only God.
You don't speak for God. God speaks through us.
Possibly. I mean,
if God speaks for God, why doesn't everybody agree on what he says? How come everybody doesn't hear him? You're claiming that the Torah is God's word.
That's the job of the priestly sect.
Right, because of free will.
To teach mankind the revelations of Sinai, which was a blueprint for how to live. It was a blueprint for how individuals ought to relate to each other, how nations ought to relate to each other, how, you know, the proper and improper type of relations in business and life.
There, it's people are given free will. People are given the opportunity to make poor decisions and to go.
Ye shall eat the wealth of the nations, feed off the riches of the nations. The nations will flow in and bring gifts. Is this the relationship you have for the world?
What context is that stated?
That's all over the Old Testament.
Well, I'd like to see that quote in what context, because
Dubit knows him.
I mean, there's the verses in Isaiah and over. Even Moses says it. They're just saying, yes, in the end of the day, we expect to be rewarded for being faithful to God. And that means
rewarded by who?
To put it to the level, when I debate Christopher M. Jerkis that we're going to be slave owners, but say like, yes, that we expect to be rewarded for our action. In fact, it's Maimonides' requirement 13 principle belief. We're required to believe that the wicked are punished and the righteous are rewarded. That was my complaint to Judas Maccabeus that refused to say the basic Maimonidean principle that, yes, I do expect the righteous to be rewarded and the wicked
And who's punished. The wicked? Esau's wicked, Amalek is wicked. They're often conflated. And modern rabbinical views
God
on who that is?
God judge who is wicked and righteous, but it's laid down the general principles of what makes a wicked person and what makes a righteous person, and saying, of course, people have free will, that God designed the system to allow people to make mistakes and be punished for those mistakes, and to be rewarded. That if we weren't allowed to make mistakes and be punished for those mistakes, we wouldn't also be
able
to
be rewarded for making the right decision. Jewish people being punished for being wicked. I mean, that's the entire narrative all the way.
Judaism's been horrible for Jewish people. Your religion is about being persecuted and suffering to atone. Slaves to Yahweh.
Well, I mean, that's Charles, if you're putting on a different, if you're saying, I'm saying Adam is rejecting the theology, but I'm saying he basically has the theology right, that is our theology. He might be exemplifying bad points or just quoting
the theology,
the things mostly that make us look bad, but that is our basic theology. And
God,
my grandfather's grandfather, who was a Reformed rabbi,
God,
agreed with Adam that this is our tradition and it's false, and that's why he became Reformed. We've discussed this many times, say that most Jews agree with Adam that our tradition is false, and that's why we became Reformed and secularized. But the people who believed in our tradition,
but that
Adam is largely correctly saying what we're supposed to believe in.
Now, that doesn't negate the covenant itself, whether or not Jews reject it, and they do, many of them.
You really believe you have a special covenant, Charles?
I know.
He's trying to do two different things. Charles trying to do two different things at the same time.
And in the world.
He's trying to say that Judaism is true and the covenant is true, but you're wrong and you misunderstand it, as opposed to I'm saying
he's trying to have it both ways.
Most Jews agree with Adam that it's just false and made up stories.
But I want to ask
ancestors, but that Adam basically has the traditional understanding of Judaism right.
I want to ask about the covenant, guys. You guys both really believe that's, what is it, maybe 2,500 or 3,000 years ago, that God had a covenant with Abraham, and you really believe that that is something special?
Yeah, when I
yes,
use the
I
word
do.
Jew, I believe I'm a direct descendant of Abraham,
covenant of Moses,
through Jacob, and that I was circumcised, and that covenant of Abraham is binding to me today.
I agree.
And this covenant story where he told him to go get all these three animals and split them in two and put them in a line, and then God carried the torch through. You think all that literally happened?
Sure.
Wow.
Do you believe that Socrates existed?
That's completely irrelevant. It wouldn't matter if he didn't exist. God starts with split apart animals and a torch flying through it in the air. That doesn't sound made up and wacky to you?
Look at that.
Splitting
happened.
Up animals. Imagine if just some weird guy was doing that in the park in your neighborhood, like had a bunch of animals split up.
Yeah, I mean,
in the
most Israelis
and
Jews
have these hallucinations.
I would say Orthodoxy is less than 10% of American Jews. Most American Jews, most Israeli Jews believe that our legends and traditions are made up and they're ridiculous.
And Christians, so many Christians believe this too.
I mean,
it's blood magic.
I mean, if you call yourself an Orthodox Jew and you believe in our traditions, and I mean, you didn't
I believe
defend
in
every
of
legend,
every
defending the covenant
word.
Versus defending every single legend in our tradition may be different, but the fact is that the vast majority of Jews around the world agree with Adam that our traditions are legends and made up and not true.
Because we've moved away from knowing God. We've moved away from our covenant. I believe that all of that is true because, you know, there are mysteries. How it happened, I have no idea. But there is a spiritual side of existence. We're not all just animals who are inanimate bags of bones and blood. There are greater things.
How are we not animals?
We are animals, but we're also, there's another dimension. There's both animal and spiritual, obviously, to me. That's obvious. Do you believe in God?
I'm not an atheist. No, I don't believe for sure that there's no God, but I definitely don't believe in Yahweh, and I don't believe anybody that claims to be able to speak for God. And I don't believe in fictional tales about cutting up a heifer, a goat, and a ram, and a dove, and a young pigeon, cut them in two, arrange them in halves, and that's how you get your chosen covenant. I think that's absurd.
Well, first of all, that was a one-time event that happened 6,000 years ago. That's not how people get the covenant.
Atonement. That's how we gain atonement for us.
That's how man understood things back then. This is, again, a very primitive time. I mean, people...
But Charles, you said last week that you hope the temple's rebuilt and we return to these sacrifices.
What about the temple?
You said last week that you hope temple is rebuilt in our
at the right time and under the right conditions.
And that these sacrifices will resume in our lifetime.
Under the
and
right
me
time,
and Charles will go to the temple and offer these sacrifices.
And
to
let
the
me
priest.
Be clear, David, I don't think that we are there now. I mean, I think that ultimately, I think it would have to come about as a result of a joint Jewish Islamic council.
But I'm talking the politics, but I'm saying you do believe in these sacrifices and that they're not meaningless. It's not a bunch of legends.
What
our ancestors believed at the time that they worked and that at some point in the future it's going to work again.
Yes, I do believe that.
Yeah, that's why, like, I guess I vindicated, that's why I spoke with Adam, because I like that he actually quoted our sources, and I was pushing back against the vast atheism. In fact, atheism affects Jews worse than most other people. And to say, like, yes, this is what we believe. And
although atheism is losing,
and Adam is not really saying anything different than the majority of American and Israeli Jews are saying, is that our traditions are nonsense and made up.
And they have fallen away from the covenant.
Is Adam saying anything different than the majority of American Jews and Israelis
he's saying?
Saying
the same thing that I hear from very ultra secular Jews.
Are there any, like, does Chabad Lubavitch believe that these are foundational myths and that they're allegory or in their fiction, or they think it all literally happened?
I think that they believe, and I am not speaking for Chabad, and by the way, no Jew speaks for God. That's a complete, that's a canard.
Well, you believe the prophets do.
No one's a prophet today.
That the spirits of prophets.
There hasn't been a prophet since. Because around the time of the book of Esther, according to Jewish understanding, God was sending prophets.
Isn't that convenient for people that
that's
want how proof?
I think that's a matter of history. I mean, there hasn't been a prophet since Malachi.
Ever?
Or Habakkuk was the last
one. How do you decide who's a prophet and who's not a prophet? Just figure ancient times, Isaiah, Jeremiah, whoever. How do you decide? Like, oh, what about Obadiah? There's a prophet I want to talk about. What happens to Edom? Who is Edom, and why should we trust that this is the word of God?
Maimonides has his rules. Adam will actually look into Maimonides probably on and see that Maimonides did have his rules of how you determine who's a prophet.
I think that there hasn't been any prophet, so-called, in Judaism that's been recognized since the time of, right around the time of the Babylonian exile. I mean, I think the last one was Habakkuk.
Why is God hiding?
Shabbatai Tzvi was possibly accepted by just as a large proportion of the Jewish people as any of the
prophets. There just hasn't been anyone that's really.
You're saying Shabbatai Tzvi was a false prophet.
The false
but there prophet. Was probably a million Jews that believed that he was a prophet, and probably 20-30% of the Jewish people did believe he was a prophet.
They did, and they then realized he was a false one because of his apostasy. But
even possible that more Jews accepted Shabbatai Tzvi as a prophet than Isaiah
briefly.
Or the prophets.
Yeah,
in
very
canon
briefly
in
until
time.
It was exposed as a fraud. But the point is that I don't believe that any person has reached that level of spirituality that they could be called a prophet since that time. It doesn't seem to me that anybody we can name.
The Talmud canonizes it that with the rebuilding of the Second Temple, prophecy ended. And there will not be another prophet till Messiah.
I accept that.
I mean, that's our basic theology. Yeah. You know, majority of Orthodox Jews from any sect largely agree that there won't be any prophet, that it closed with Ezra and the,
I think the prophet
men of the great assembly and Messiah. We wait for Messiah, who will be the last of the prophets.
Yeah, I mean, I think the prophecies ended with the destruction of the first temple. I think they might have lasted a little bit longer than that, but my understanding
is... What about, you don't think the restoration of Israel is fulfilling prophecy?
Yes, I do. And I think that it sets the stage for the coming of the Messiah and the re-emergence of a temple and the re-emergence of a prophetic age. We're not there yet, though.
And what happens to Edom and Amalek in that time, in your view?
They know God, is what happens.
That's not what it says.
Or get destroyed. Well, they know God, or they get destroyed.
You can look at any Jewish prayer book where we go through.
Amalek can be saved?
Yes. You look at any Jewish prayer book. Take a Siddur and take a look at what we pray for every day in the Mincha and in Ma'ariv, that all of man will know God at that time. All of man.
Because the ones that don't will be killed or will disappear.
Or be destroyed. Whatever happens. I mean, saying Adam, at that time, the Messiah comes, will have the choice to repent or be destroyed, just as all of humanity.
The Messianic age.
Okay, Amalek.
What happens to the people who don't obey? Like, they get destroyed. That's what our books say.
Only if they're at war with God, in which case they're met on the field of battle.
So they don't. So we don't believe in Yahweh, and we're met on the field of battle.
No, that's not the definition of those who are met on the field of battle.
What do you consider at war with God? Is not worshiping and believing in Yahweh not considered at war with?
No, people who are actively trying to subvert knowledge of God, people who are worshiping man. I would say the communist movement is an example of that. The Nazi movement is an example of that. The modern transhumanist movement is an example of that.
Let me say followers.
They're trying
false
to replace
prophets.
God in heaven. They're engaging in the sin of Adam and Eve.
Worshippers of idols, followers of false prophets will no longer have the ability to follow false prophets or worship false idols.
Because they'll be exposed. Not because
our messianic times, all righteous people will stand shoulder to shoulder in mutual worship of
anyone
the one true
has
creator,
the opportunity to do that.
And that's going to be all that's left. I think that is largely what the prophets say. I mean, there's the Christian comparison to say at the end of the days, the Jews will have to accept Jesus or be destroyed. And that's largely a parallel to the Jewish messianic belief that people will have to submit to Hashem, Jehovah, or be destroyed.
I think it's just to know God is to know the truth, to know the greater truths, the universal truths, and to know that there is a creator of the universe that created the universe ex nihilo, out of nothing, and therefore created a system of moral and ethical understandings. And
that's why I like Adam, because Adam quotes Maimonides. Charles argues with Maimonides and claims what he says is true, even though it's in opposition to Maimonides. And Adam actually quotes Maimonides.
That Maimonides was not a prophet. I mean, he was a great doctor.
Well, I'm saying he was a prophet, but you're claiming that's what Jews believe.
I've never heard anybody claim
when Maimonides says different, that that's not what we believe.
But there's been a lot of debate over Maimonides' beliefs. I mean, he's a respected physician in his time. He actually brought Aristotelian metaphysics into Judaism in the same way.
He knew Jesus was Moshiach ben Yosef because he believed that Christianity was a stepping stone in preparing the world.
Maimonides is one of the few
age.
People who say that Jesus was a false prophet and that he was put to death by the rabbinic court. There are Kabbalists who do say that Jesus was Moshiach ben Joseph, although that's very rare.
Well, by the way,
Maimonides is straight up that Jesus was a false prophet and he was put to death correctly by the rabbinic court.
That's what they said. Wisdom of Solomon, Isaiah, they had to do it. That was part of the plan. That's
part
of the plot.
But it's not what Maimonides said.
But the Moshiach ben Joseph thing is not,
was correctly
not
put
conventional
to
Judaism.
Death.
I mean, or is it
sure
conventional
it is.
Christianity? I mean, Jesus
it's,
was
it,
the
it comes
son
before
of David.
Christianity. The belief in two messiahs is pre-Christian.
No, the book of Luke and the book of Matthew both give genealogies of Jesus as being descended from King David. King David was not Ben Joseph. King David was Ben Judah.
Yeah, but he was Yeshua, son of Joseph. He was the suffering Messiah.
A man named Joseph. That's not Joseph, the tribe of Joseph.
You don't
Michael
think...
Adam this, I mean, Christopher also, that that's, most that's... modern day Hasidim hold that Shlomo Carliner a few hundred years was Mashiach ben Joseph, and he was assassinated, and the founder, one of the leaders of the Karlin Hasidic sect in Eastern Europe. But you know that the
whole I see the confusion here. He might have been, you know,
the concept of Mashiach ben Joseph is
married to his mother Mary. That doesn't mean that he was of a son of the tribe of Joseph.
But I mean that the Judaic belief that there's going to be two messiahs, the first messiah who gets assassinated and sets the pace for the Mashiach ben David to come. That's a traditional Jewish theology that the majority of Orthodox Jews accept, that there's going to be two messiahs. It's in the prophets. The first one, Mashiach ben Joseph, gets assassinated, but lays the ground for the ultimate messiah to come in a way that it could make sense for Jesus to have been that Mashiach ben Joseph, well, but almost no Orthodox Jew, Orthodox Jew thinks that Jesus was Mashiach ben Joseph. And no, I mentioned the most common person that people actually think could have been Mashiach ben Joseph is Shlomi Carliner. Do.
I mean, there's been Messianic Jews all throughout history, and Christians and Orthodox Jews that have compared Jesus to Mashiach ben Yosef. And there's many parallels with Mashiach ben Yosef.
I mean, because he was martyred. I mean, because Mashiach wins. Like, our Mashiach conquers like Mashiach and wins and rebuilds the temple. The Mashiach ben Joseph gets martyred.
Yeah, he and our is Mashiach an anti-Christ figure. Martyred. You're right. An anti-Messiah figure.
Our false prophet. Restores like the Jewish people is. To our former glory and rebuilds the temple. He doesn't get martyred.
Have you heard of this guy, Messianic Jew, Return of the Kosher Pig?
If he's a Messianic Jew, then he's a Christian. That's fine. I respect that, but that's
he disagrees with you. The Messianic Jews believe in Jesus. They don't like to be classified as Christians because they still keep.
If they believe in Jesus as Christ, then by nature they are Christians. That's what Christianity says. Jesus.
Well,
was
it's the a Christ. Semantic labeling.
It's more than a semantic
game.
If you believe that Jesus was the Christ, and I'm not criticizing here, you're a Christian. You're a follower of Jesus as the Christ. That makes you a Christian. I'm not criticizing. It's a different religion.
I agree, but I'm saying they have arguments and would disagree with you. That's all I'm saying.
I'm sure they
I want to back you up because you said something about Amalek that just I so strongly disagree with.
Okay.
You said that Amalek can be rectified, that Amalek can be saved and come to God. Completely not true.
Well, first of all, Amalek of no Saul, longer exists.
Saul didn't blot out every man, woman, and child and all of their animals, and then he lost his throne as a lesson that you have to, as a modern day contemporary commandment, a mitzvah to blot out the memory of the seed of Amalek.
Well, first of all, let me just say, I want to say about Amalek, my understanding is that Amalek appears in the Torah in Sinai as having attacked the caravan from behind. Now, what that means is that, and this is where you have the rules of war created.
This is a fictional story that you're using to wage war on anybody that opposes
you. This is
throughout history.
Fictional or not, this is what the Torah says about Amalek. You mentioned Amalek, how it's viewed in Judaism. Amalek was attacked the caravan from behind, where women and children and the elderly and the infirm were. And this was seen as so evil that God punished Amalek and asked Moses to punish Amalek. And what Amalek represents today are people who are involved in such acts of overthrowing the social order, such evil acts, you know, blowing up buildings, hijacking airplanes to blow up a building, different things like that, that we are commanded to stop them. That's not a tribe. It becomes an action. Amalek did something that completely overthrew and violated the social order in a way that was terroristic by attacking the caravan from behind. That's what Amalek is, and that's what Amalek was. And then, we are commanded to stop that. That's why we set up societies. That's why we
you
set up-
You should watch my hour-long compilation called Amalek.
Okay,
you'll see
I will.
You're partly right. What you're saying it has some truth in it, but you're missing a whole lot of how they view Amalek and what happens to them and how it's.
But there is no tribe of Amalek today that's identified.
Yeah, they believe it's mixed everywhere between all over the Gentiles.
It's all
and over, even
and
in
Judaism,
the mixed multitude of the.
Amalek is any person who violates the social order. I mean, I'm kind of channeling.
I've never seen that definition anywhere.
You know, it violates.
It's having doubts. It's going against the Torah. It's not believing in having obedience to Yahweh.
Well,
it's opposing. It's opposing Judaism in any way.
Amalek is from the tribe of Esav. I'm saying Amalek, it was a mistake.
If you say it's going against the Torah, then look at the Torah and what it says, and I'm not going to repeat myself, about Amalek.
It's interesting.
He violated the social order in his day. He just, by using, you know, destroying that which was known to be right and true in a literal way, by killing the innocent people. That is what every society has Amaleks in it. We set up societies and we set up systems of justice to combat that. And we should, because otherwise we'll have anarchy.
Well, I mean, I think Charles misses the basic historic, we'll call Jewish theology. And because it's funny, because Adam, you know, the blue-eyed man never mentions Ishmael. But, you know, generally, yes, that was the theology that Esav becomes the angel of Christian countries.
Prosecution.
And Ishmael becomes the nation of Muslim countries. And it's an east-west divider, that the West is under majority the guidance of Esav. And Amalek comes from the tribe of Esav. Amalek is a descendant of Esav. And I mean, Adam's obviously a blue-eyed man. He's not necessarily so concerned with Islam.
Nothing to do with that.
Or the East.
It's not.
But the same thing is saying Ishmael is the dominant factor in Islam and the East, and that the dominant. So I mean, it's not necessarily like Amalek factor of evil that is in all societies. They know Amalek is more, at least in our sages and our texts, is conducive to evil. Mostly in the West, although the Purim story, Haman is also seen as a Moloch, and Ishmael is the dominant factor in the East in Islam, and it's a completely different. And I've never heard Adam talk much about Ishmael, but he's a Westerner. He's from the North. It's not applicable, necessarily to the West.
Want to interject. Yeah, it has nothing to do with race. Okay. Because Judaism is not a race.
Well, that's why our texts bring it down. I'm saying, like, our texts do bring it down as a lineage, that a Moloch, I mean, Adam even told me, he says, like, I think he's a Moloch. And I said, like, no, you can't be a Moloch. Adam told me his parents are basically normal Christians, never said anything bad about Jews. And from my understanding, no, a Moloch is a blood descendant of a Moloch. It's not just someone who hates Jews is a Moloch. God forbid, a Moloch, it means that his father had to have hated Jews and his grandfather had to have hated Jews, and he's waging a blood war. And
well, all Gentiles are born.
To say that even Esav, that it's actually a blood war, that Amalek is, we might not know who Amalek is, but it's a blood lineage and it's carried out. I mean, you could take some sort of reincarnation or a spirit, but I think our texts clearly say it is in fact a blood lineage. And the Torah says our Hebrew texts say it's a blood lineage.
It says descendants is what is in nations.
That's what I said. It's impossible that if Adam's your parents were neutral and even had a positive view towards Jews.
It's impossible that
he's a Moloch. There's zero chance that Adam is a Moloch.
If what you're saying is true, that it's actually a blood descendant, then we don't know who that is. And anyone who says that they know is.
Who cares who knows who it is? The idea is that you have to exterminate people in order for your messianic age to commence. It says you have to destroy Amalek or Edom. I've seen Edom there as well. Build the temple, anoint the Moshiach. It's genocidal. It's a genocidal theology.
Anybody who claims that they know who Amalek is.
Well, it's apocalyptic. It's not genocidal. It means there's going to be an end of days. And at the end of days, the tribe of Amalek will rearise. And there will be a great war. Maimonides is actually one of the few, if only, major sages that say Amalek could repent. The majority of the sages say Amalek can't repent. There is no chance. But Maimonides actually says that if Amalek changes his way, he could also be accepted. But we do have an apocalyptic. I mean, Charles, you disagree. The prophets lay out an apocalyptical end of days where these forces are going to reemerge and there's going to be a great war.
Any individual can repent of sin. You can do it on
But you argue with the sages. You're saying only Maimonides says that. The majority of the sages say Amalek can't repent. I mean, so your opinion on the matter, Charles, doesn't matter because it's against what our sages say. Mm-hmm.
Fine. Then, as I said before, we don't know who Amalek is, and anyone who claims that they do is.
Yeah, but our book said that we do have an apocalyptical belief system.
Rabbis on YouTube say that it's European.
And at the end of the day, that this tribe will rearise. I mean, Charles, you don't believe that? That at the end of days, there will be a great war, and these ancient tribes will rearise?
This is maybe at the end of time, religion that manifests and breeds genocidal hatred. The idea that Esau
was a misinterpretations of the religion breed it.
Yeah, but well, if you're saying it's a religion, then that's where does that get into the question of ancestry? I mean, that's, you know, that's an idea that, that
right, so just like there wasn't Abraham, it's a fact, and me and Charles are descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. There is an Amalek, and the enemies of the Jewish people are in fact descendants of Amalek, and saying that is somewhat part of our belief system.
I think that's a very narrow rabbinic view, and I don't think it's a majority opinion. No,
it clearly says in our text.
You got to see the compilation from all the rabbis on YouTube. They're all saying
that's why I said my ancestors were reformed. I will have to say they agreed that our traditions were inaccurate and needed to be amended. But I say, like, no, I mean, this is what our book said for thousands of years. This is what our rabbis wrote about in Europe for over 1,000 years. Almost every single rabbi in Europe kept this opinion in view.
Talked about like a bloodline
that the church
of
and
Amalek.
The royal bloodlines in Europe. Were the descendants of Esav? Were the descendants of Esav?
It sounds like bloodlines. It sounds like,
and just like Muhammad. Muhammad, the Quran itself says that Muhammad is a descendant of Ishmael, and generally the rabbis agree that Khomeini and Nasrallah. We've discussed this. Nasrallah and Khomeini are descendants of Ishmael. They claim it themselves, and the rabbis agree. Those people are modern-day descendants.
Yeah, but
of
that
Ishmael.
Doesn't mean they're descended from Amalek. And also, you know, this sounds—they're
not. They're descended from Ishmael. We don't know who's descended from Amalek.
We don't know. That sounds to me like this. The bloodlines of the ruling aristocracy of Europe. And I've heard. I think I've heard you talk about this, Adam. And it's actually interesting. You know, the 300 families that rule the world. You know that. Or maybe not you, but I've heard this.
I haven't talked about that.
I don't know if you talk much about the European royalty.
I think it was Lundberg's bloodline.
The Middle Eastern royalty is descended from Ishmael. The European royalty is descended from Esau.
I think the Abrahamic
religion wrote.
And
whether
the
it's true or not, but saying that was what we believed our ancestors believed for thousands of years.
But they didn't claim to know who it was. Anyways, listen, guys, I'm kind of at the end of it because I want to be able to download this into some of my channels, and they usually don't let me do over an hour.
You're already over an hour because you have
us
on the same program.
That's true. So I probably should wrap it up. But really interesting conversation. Adam, I really want to thank you for joining me. I've wanted to talk to you. Please let my viewers and listeners know where they can reach you and how they can listen to your show.
NoMoreNews.org is where you can find all my links. I'm posting my videos, streaming and posting on Odyssey, and then also on BitChute, and I'm on Twitter, Gab, Telegram, social media places. I've been banned. YouTube, DLive, Trovo, PayPal, Coinbase, Squarespace, just for criticizing this religion. And the Abrahamic religions is who's running the world, not some 300 families, although there are obviously families that are involved. But through the Abrahamic religions, Islam and Christianity, that is what has been controlling the world more than anything else in the last 2,000 years.
I think that's probably true, although China is challenging that. Anyway, David, what do you have coming up?
Just my regular week in review, where we mostly just talk about science and consciousness. I appreciate Adam's scholarship. You're saying, like, unfortunately, even, you know, like Charles, he doesn't take the text that seriously. I think it's the hand of God. I think largely this is true.
So do I.
And it's not a conspiracy. It's the hand of God. And, but God will judge all people, justly. And, if Adam's a good person, he helps out the poor and he's nice to people, even if he has negative opinions on our tradition, that, generally God judges a person on their actions. So, and I'm not the person's judge, but I actually enjoy these conversations. These are my favorite type of conversations. And I said that Adam he's not really asking any questions that I didn't ask when I went to Jerusalem. And I think, if Charles sent his son to Jerusalem, he would probably be asking the rabbi the same questions. Adam is obviously in the current political climate and anti-Semitism.
And by the way,
to have a non-Jew asking these questions could be scary to scary to people.
That's what we do.
Me and Charles are both free speech and kind of enjoy these conversations.
Absolutely, it's a great Jewish tradition to criticize our own people and to try to get right with God. I mean, that goes way back. Anyways, I want to thank everyone for watching. Mm-hmm. I'm self-sponsored, and my latest book is The Satanic Conspiracy, available at Amazon. Thank you very much. And gentlemen, we should do it again. Thanks a lot.
Oh, thanks. Have a great week.
All right. You too.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
Take care. Thank you.